Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is Ray Ferraro. What's happening, Ray?
I'm after a good weekend of sports, kind of hanging around, getting ready for whatever the hell the week is. Got my last round of golf tomorrow, and as always, just excited to talk to you guys.
Well, why the last round? Why last round?
Knee hinge fix on Thursday.
Oh, God.
Wow. And that'll take me into January, I think. So,
how long? How much could you golf for? Like, how much longer could you golf for? Right up to December?
Probably till December 1st. Yeah. And then again, some guys play all year out here, and they've got these goofy shoes they wear that they can play when it gets wet. And I'm like, well, why would you do that? Like, you hit your drive, it goes in the air, it lands, it's like dropping a bowling ball in the middle of the fairway, right? Everything's so wet. I'm like, I don't want to do that. But yeah, guys are playing really pretty good conditions to the end of November for sure.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad.
He's asking the question about the U.S. Open. See what he says.
I saw the one online.
Yeah, so
no,
it was
no chance.
No chance, right? Let's explain here. So you going up against, it's DeChambeau against Koliakovo and Duthie scramble. So for those who are not familiar,
all at
with that,
6 under. DeChambeau's at 6 under. Our threesome as a group is 6 under. We tee it up, and Hayes thinks that DeChambeau beats us.
I think you lose by 10.
I don't think it's close, because you got to think you'll be playing the same course, right? So if we're playing like a course that we normally play, he shoots 60. You guys aren't shooting 60.
And it's a wing foot we're talking about here. So
okay,
it's even...
so you're a wing foot. You guys hit it into the rough, and you're in there for a week.
Yeah.
And
he it's a scramble, though. It's a scramble.
That's fine. Some of the best drives, they're all going to be in the rough. Like, you three options in the rough. Can you imagine Duthie with a weed whacker trying to get out of the rough?
And he would have that elbow brace strapped on so tight.
Yeah, he'd have to. He'd be going in for, full treatment before the round. He'd have acupuncture ready in between the 9th and the 10th tee.
You and Carlo would go and grind, and you'd work at it. Duthie would fold like a tent.
Mm-hmm. Carlo would
he'd
just be
nervous.
Fishing.
Yeah, Carlo would be fishing. He'd be like, "This is a pretty decent pond we got over here." No, it's you guys got no shot, but. DeChambeau, we said it off the top of the show, that was a masterpiece, to play Wingfoot, four rounds of par or better is as good as it gets. I mean, that's the best golf you're ever going to see from a human being on a course like that.
You know what I found, guys, really interesting, and I think it applies to any sport, is like you could almost hear the announcers hating what he was doing. Like they hated it. They're like, how many times did you hear, "I'm not so sure this is good for golf"? Well, why not? He figured he did something that other guys can't do. And then they start talking about, is this the way it's always going to be? No, because Xander Schauffele is 135 pounds. He cannot hit it 380 yards. Like, if you physically you can do this, well, why not try it? But just think how hard it would be to have that touch and be that long.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's his whole game.
Man, it's everything.
Yeah.
And I know he's goofy, and I know he's got these scientist ways, and people don't like that because it's different. But, man, I don't see how it's much different than what Tiger did back in the day. Remember when all the golfers were a bunch of fat guys? And then Tiger came on, and he's just shredded. He worked out like nobody before him.
Yeah.
And everybody said, "Oh, look, he's taking it to the next level." Well, that's what DeChambeau did. He's just not the same as Tiger, right? Like Tiger's story was captivating from when he was hitting a golf ball in a dryer when he was on the Merv Griffin show, for crying out loud, or whatever it was.
Well, you wonder if the USGA is going to listen to Jack Nicklaus and do something about the golf ball, because as Jack said at the Memorial, there's no more land to start moving tees farther back than they already are. Like,
but doesn't that seem like reasonable?
What, the golf ball?
Yes, because if you're still the longest guy, you're the longest guy. It just, instead of it going 385 yards, it goes 310 yards. But you're still the longest guy.
Mm. So what
they started. noodles when they got into the goalie gear. And yeah. they were going to shrink it down, and the goalies were all, you know, they all got their pants in a knot. Yeah. And unless you were just a complete blob and a blocker, the best goalies are still the best goalies. Their goals yeah. against average went up a little bit, but they're still the best goalies. Their save percentage went down a little bit, but they're still the best. And right. I think that's it's the same thing here.
Well, was there an obligation or a sense of obligation for every goalie to dress bigger? Back when that was happening, Noodles? Like, did everyone just have to become a true believer and say, fine, give me those massive pads, the huge pants?
No, no. Honestly, it depends. Like, for me, the only thing I did that I adjusted as you kind of saw guys do, I loosened my pants. So my pants were more like a barrel instead of form-fitting, and what that did, would it would just give me a couple inches in the midsection area when, you know, you go down. It was just coverage. Like, my pads were always the same, and I like things tight. Jonathan Quick, I remember talking to him, and he was like, I like to feel my gear. Like, other guys, you couldn't even feel your gear because it was so big. So, you know, I tried things, but not everything, you know, not everything worked. You know, some guys, remember John Sebastian Deguerre, how big
huge,
he was?
Massive.
He was, and then you'd see him off the ice, and you're like, he's skinny. He's a rail. Like, same thing with Chris Osgood. Chris Osgood, he's a lot smaller than me physically, but he looked as big as I did on the ice. And that's where I think, where when it came to goaltenders, you needed streamlining. So a guy that was 6'4" and 220 pounds, that should be an advantage. That actually should be an advantage size, where what's happening is goalies were just being squared off because you could, you know, you could loosen the pants. You could, you know, wear things
looser. And it affects the psychology of a shooter, right? Right?
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't matter how big the guy actually is. If you can't see the net, you can't see the net.
Yep.
We were in L.A. Do you remember a goalie named Frederick Chabot?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we picked up Freddie in a deal, and he came in, and Freddie's not a big guy. And he got into his pants, it like he stole them from a 300-pound guy. It was like he was standing in a barrel. And then he tucked in his chest protector inside his pants, and he puffed out even more. And I'm like, man, look at this. I had no idea. But why not? Like, if you can, why not do it? And it's like DeChambeau. Like, he can do things physically that other people just can't do. They can try and do whatever they want. The dude's a monster to start with. He weighs 230 pounds. And so he's got crazy swing speed. And so he can do things other guys can't. And until they figure out a way to make that not an advantage, why wouldn't he do it?
Well, and there's always an overreaction. Like, now everyone just thinks he's going to win every major. He's not. Like, he's not going to win every tournament.
He wins Augusta.
I mean, he's going to be in contention. He's got to be there. But, like, is he all of a sudden better than Dustin Johnson? Like, on Wednesday, we said Johnson just put forth the greatest month of golf we've maybe ever seen. Now DeChambeau's better because of four rounds? I don't think so.
Now, do you think Brooks Koepka felt like he ate a poop sandwich?
A little bit.
After ripping DeChambeau like he did, and then, oh, look at this. I'm home injured, and this guy's stomping the field.
Right.
Oh, he's going to have to look a few guys in the eye that are just... I think Rory even had some comments about the putter and the way he putts. And...
yeah, what's going on with Rory here? Apparently he was criticizing the way guys were putting. Is that right?
Well,
holding
it
the
was
putter?
About DeChambeau, but I didn't think it was necessarily critical. He was saying what we're all thinking. Like, this is different and, wow, it's weird, but it works. You know, like, okay, I guess, go for it. Like, because it's not just bombing off the tee. You got to have a short game, which he did. You got to putt. You got to, you know, play smart, and that's what happened.
When he came out of college, guys, I was playing golf and with a guy that didn't play very much, and he asked me. He said, "Why does it not make sense that all your clubs are the same length? Like, he could hit a 5-iron, and everything else was a disaster." And he's like, well, you don't have a different stick for the power play or a different. And I'm like, no, I don't. And I'm like, I don't even really know why. Because they're always this length. And DeChambeau's got all his clubs the same way. Man,
right.
The guy's a scientist and he's, you know, he studied this stuff and he understands it. It works for him. Nobody was saying DeChambeau was the way 2 weeks ago when Dustin Johnson lapped the field and was 30 under.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Things come and go. That's the way it works. And You know, it feels like that could be the case with Alex Pietrangelo in St. Louis, where those negotiations have gone public all of a sudden, or something leaked in terms of what the Blues are willing to offer him, maybe what he's looking for, maybe he will get to free agency. You know, if there's truth in that, that St. Louis is willing to go to 7.7, and Noodles made the point, and I think it's an appropriate one, that means really it's $8 million. You know, like if it has to be $8 million, then fine, it's $8 million. But to use that as a bold number, that's not 9, 9.5, 10, 10.5, maybe 11, right, which is what Doughty and Carlson are making. Where do you see this going with Pietrangelo, St. Louis, and the free market if he gets there?
Well, my understanding is the real stumbling block is the bonus money that he wants. You know, he wants significant chunks of bonus money, like the players seem to get now. Like, the one thing that ownerships or management's kind of lost the plot on, I think, was paying these guys gigantic sums of bonus money on July 1st. And now, like, look at all the money that teams had to pay out this past July. Now, this is a crazy summer, but, you know, so that's really not fair to say, oh, see, look, they had to pay and there's no season. That's a little bit unfair. It makes the deals really difficult to move further down the line if you don't have a full no move. St. Louis has never apparently signed a deal that's had bonus money in it. They've acquired players that have bonus money, but they've not signed one. And so part of this stalemate, or whatever you want to call it, is that he wants bonus money because that's what all the top free agents have done, and St. Louis doesn't want to do it. And so of the 7.7 to 8, or the 7 years to 8 years and all that other stuff, this is a real problem, and they haven't figured out a way to get past it. And maybe he go, and it's beginning to look more and more like, you know, if each side's dug in on that, well, you're not going to fix it. You know, another 2 weeks isn't going to fix it. It's still going to be, I want the bonus money. You can't have the bonus money. Okay, well, now we got a problem.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think he lands, Ray? Where do you think's a good fit? And yes.
Well, of course. I mean, we're in Toronto. Of course, Toronto would be fantastic, right? Like, the guy's a legit top one or two guy on your team. He's a one on 90% of the teams. You know, I don't know that he's, you know, that there's many players you could even possibly acquire that would be in his sphere. Like, when do these guys become available? They don't, and if they do, you've got to trade half your team to go get them. So I think Toronto's a good spot, or a legit spot. I think Boston's a legit spot. You know, Torrey Krug goes, there's $5 million. What if they go back to Chara at 42 years old and say it's not $3 million, it's $1
million? Right.
There's another couple of million. Now you're in the ballpark, and you're like, wow, how about Boston with Pietrangelo? Like, that would be legit. I would think Calgary would be all over it.
Winnipeg?
Do they have the cap space, Noodles?
Well, yeah, I think that. Winnipeg does, because Big Buff's money's gone, right? Like, that's...
Well, and that defense last year was, well, Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk, even though you hadn't even really heard of Neil Pionk, but a bunch of guys that you never heard of.
I think, looking at Winnipeg's cap structure, I think they've got four unrestricted free agents back there. Like, Chevy has to rebuild that defensive core. If any
team, you can rebuild a lot of it with him, right?
That's what I was saying it to the guys in the 4 o'clock hour. I believe Winnipeg, if it was just straight on fitting him in, I think it would be a great fit for them, because if you look at it, they've got Kulikov, Spezza, Beaulieu, DeMello, and Bieto are all unrestricted free agents, and they've got to sign Sammy Niku. The rest are Morrissey, Pionk, Dahlstrom, and Poolman are under contract, and they're all, you know,
you can make that work. You can definitely make it work.
I got news for anybody. Those are not names that you're running to the wall for.
Exactly.
Like, they're, as one GM says, they're just a guy. Meaning, like, you can find another guy like that.
Yeah.
And
right.
man, you drop Pietrangelo into the middle of something like that. Well, now you're getting somewhere. But if I'm a team that's even close to having the space, I'm on the case of figuring it out. Like, can I make a legit offer? Can I make him interested in what we have to say?
Well, if you isolate it to the Canadian teams, Montreal, no, they have Weber and Petrie on the right side. You know, like obviously they have room, and it would just be an embarrassment of riches. But I don't picture them being in. Ottawa, no, he's not going there, and they're not spending. Vancouver, no, because they're up against the cap, and I think Tanev's already walking. I don't think they could make that work. I guess they could if they traded Besser.
If they walked away from Stetcher, too, right?
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. You're walking away from guys you wouldn't normally do, but Stetcher's going to be a couple of million. Tanev's over four. Markstrom's at six. There's 12. And if I've got to pitch all of that or, you know, eight and a half of that to Pietrangelo, I'm doing it.
Yeah. So maybe Vancouver is in the mix.
How would Pietrangelo and Hughes look together? Yeah. Probably pretty good.
Oh, it'd be maybe the best pairing in the league. I mean, it would have potential to be the best pairing. And then there's Edmonton, who they need them too. But do they have, you know, are they far along into the we got to eat cap to be able to make a pitch? I mean, they're no different than anyone else in Canada.
I don't think they've got any room to make a move like this. But if you're Pietrangelo, you're talking about teams, and all of a sudden you could play with McDavid, and you know, this is, I know what happens for anybody that gets mentioned in the breadth of Edmonton, but yeah, that's a selling point. The one thing I will say about Pietrangelo, he's not really, I mean, not terrible at it, but he's not really a number one power play guy. So that would be something that you would have to expect when, you know, you might get him and think he can do that too. That's not really what he does. That's not that makes him a worse fit or anything. It's just, you know, something to keep in mind as you're thinking about what he could do.
Speaking of that, game two, Stamkos, we'll find out tonight, but a lot of people are basically circling him as a power play specialist. Like, can you make sense of that if you're John Cooper? Do you take a guy out of the lineup for Stamkos for 7 or 8 minutes tonight of him at 65%?
100%. I would. I mean, they got 7D. They got that monster that plays 30 minutes a night in Hedman. Mm-hmm. You don't need 7D. Their power play's 0 for, I think, 14. They got one power play goal in the last seven games. Man, even if you're just playing him a couple of shifts and he stands in that left circle, even if he doesn't do anything terribly effective, he's there and they have to worry about him.
Yeah.
The one thing to remember too, though, it's not, this just isn't like a regular guy coming back in the playoffs and, oh, what a great story. And he hasn't played in 6 or 7 months. Like, this is a big ask.
Right.
So to think that he would even be, I don't know, anywhere near, like, what did you say, Brian, 65%?
Give or take.
Injury.
If not, he can't be any more than that, right? Like, he's just skating around in morning skates. Like, he hasn't had an exhibition game. He hasn't had anything. It would be a lot.
When did he get hurt?
February?
Yeah.
No idea.
It was before the shutdown. It was a few weeks before the shutdown, I believe.
And then he was, you know, it looked like he was on pace to play in the second round when there was, you know, the regular scheduling. And then he got hurt again doing, I don't know what, like, you know, in training or whatever. And then, well, of course, it's now, you know, now here we are in September and he's still not ready or borderline not ready.
Well, I mean, it'll be fun if he plays, right?
It's, you know, it'd be good. It would be something interesting.
Yes, it would be. And they could use
it. We need interest. We need juice.
Need clickbait. Yeah. Need it tonight. All right, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
Okay, talk to you later. And, no chance. You guys can't beat the Shamble. I'd like to support you on this one, but you just can't.
No, it's just not even close. I think he'd get lapped. The three of you, even if you add me in on it, no way. No chance.
Well, is that supposed to help?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. I'm like, I might give you a shot or two, like maybe.
Okay, well, next fall or next spring, let's get a tour player and just see where it stands, like on a normal course.
That would be fun. Yeah, we'll play somewhere in Toronto and we'll get Dillette up
there's
here.
Got to be a, could you get Graham Dillette?
Yeah.
Could you get a guy like Graham Dillette?
Well, if he wants to fly into Toronto or something. But even
I think I told you guys a month ago or 6 weeks ago, Dan Murphy and I played with Nick Taylor. And we played it where they played the Canadian event when it was out in Vancouver at Northview. And we played from the back tees, and Murph and I shot about 80. Nick didn't break a sweat and shot 63. Like, it was like the only similarity was we all had golf clubs.
Right. You're breathing and you're playing golf. Yeah, that's it.
The pro we were with, he's like, okay, you guys hit it over this left bunker. Nick, your line's way over here. Like, it was like a different world. And Nick's not especially long. So I that would be really fun, play a scramble against the tour guy.
Yep.
And then get smashed. They'd just pound you, and you'd be like, wow, do we suck.
It would be a rude awakening, and we probably don't need any more of those. We play enough
to know we suck.
Yeah, but we'll see. All right, buddy. We'll do it tomorrow at 5.
Okay, see you. Have a good day, guys.
Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's Maple Toyota's birthday, and they're giving you the gifts this month. Buy any new vehicle and receive a free gift. Red Tag savings continue with rates from 0%.